there's a way to have humility without self-abandonment, which is by definition is internal confidence or internal worth.
Building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello, and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. So I have been thinking a lot lately about what ambition looks like when you don't feel like you have anything to prove to anyone anymore. Because there's a big difference between being driven by a chip on your shoulder and being driven by something internal. And that is what I'm talking about with today's guest, Stephen Scoggins. Stephen teaches that success isn't really about that external applause. And I think if we all look deeply enough, that is something that drives a lot of us. But it's more about finding our purpose internally and finding our own meaning in our success over chasing those metrics. We go deep today on what that actually looks like in practice. This was a really cool conversation where he gives very concrete steps as to how you go from practicing in ego to practicing in alignment. We also talk about whether hustle culture is really gone or it's just rebranded, why we are still secretly rewarding overworking, how to recognize when you're scaling from insecurity, and honestly, a lot more. So if you've ever felt ambitious but less impressed by the scoreboard in front of you, and if you're still building but you want to do it without losing yourself in the process, this one is going to make you. Let's get into it. Thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
I'm super stoked to be here. I've been trying to get this done for a while now, so I'm excited to be doing it today.
Yes, me too. Okay, so we were talking a little bit before this, and I told you that last night I did just a short talk at an event, and the last question was, what's next? Which is an interesting question, right? I think for a lot of people, it's like, I got exits and, you know, like their hustle mentality and they're always like running at that scoreboard. But I genuinely, you know, 13 years into a company, I don't feel like I'm proving anything to anyone anymore. And it's very serendipitous to be talking to you today because that's a lot of your mentality and kind of what you talk about and what you coach people on. So I want to dig into that today. Tell me a little bit to start about your background and how you got to this place where you believe in like the success without applause and that success is really about internal purpose.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. That's an awesome question, by the way. Thank you. First thing I want to acknowledge is the alignment journey or the journey towards authenticity. I'm a little jealous, to be honest with you, that you're 13 years in, you've already figured it out, something that took me 25 years to figure out, which is essentially that hustle culture by definition kind of has to die. And what I mean by that is we challenge ourselves with scoreboards that we learn in early education. You know, as soon as you can have as soon as you have your first best friend, right? Or someone to kind of align yourself with, you start competing subconsciously, whether you realize it or not. And depending on what kind of like background you have, it can be pretty substantial, even traumatic in what drives you to make the behaviors or do the behaviors you have. I say all that to say that one of the things I'm probably most known for, this is the thing I'm trying to shift in the marketplace because I have a whole lot more to offer than just this, is essentially starting a company with homeless and then growing it to 9 figures before exiting. And in late 2023. And people ask me a lot of times, well, how'd you do that? Right. And kind of like, what's the thing? And I've really wrestled with that the last 3 years specifically. Mm-hmm. And I finally feel like I actually have some really strong answers that aren't like self-serving or somehow like, you know, this is my credibility chart. Look at my checkbox. Cause I live by performance. I legitimately live by performing like a dancing monkey for year after year after year. I managed to be successful. And I managed to have some nice things and do some nice things. And even when I exited the company, even though I had a plan when I exited, what I was going to do next, speak and coach and teach and write books and the things I love doing now, I was sitting at the top of this mountain completely by myself in this house, massive house, top of a mountain in Utah, before I moved back to the Carolinas. And just like, I spent my entire life chasing this, getting the house in the exotic destination, having the financial freedom to come and go as I please, having relationships that people, for lack of a better word, when they realize some of the folks that I call friends, they're like, and here I am, supposedly I have the life that everyone, you know, essentially clawing for. And yet I was probably the most unhappy I've ever been outside of the day I was homeless. So when you look at the contrast moments, it's like, I have nothing, I'm unhappy. I have everything, I'm unhappy. Mm-hmm. Where is truth? And for me, I discovered that truth to me is becoming the whole self, right? I didn't know what drove the behaviors for me to constantly prove and go after things the way I went after them, or I'll give you an example. This is a prime example of Stephen before, Stephen after. So I've been a speaker now for probably close to 6-8 years, give or take, right? Actually putting myself out there, getting on stages, do my thing, trying to be of service the entire time. However, 3 years ago, I went and spoke at this event called FounderCon with a good friend of mine, Tamara Andrus. She has several hundred people that come out on an annual basis for her event. And I spoke on stage at the time, and you know, I had someone who was in the audience at that event who saw me speak, who 2 years later comes to the same event where I'm speaking again for the first time in 2 years, because I took a 2-year hiatus after exiting. Just because I was trying to, is this what I'm called to do? Is this what I'm for? Is this the message I'm supposed to carry? That kind of thing. Yeah. And lo and behold, I get done speaking at this second event, and she comes up and she's crying. She is just like letting it go. And I'm like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? She goes, I have to give you the sticky note. And I'm like, so I have this yellow sticky note, and it says powerful, present, embodied. Hmm. And I was like, thank you. She goes, no, you don't understand. I saw you speak 2 years ago and you were electric, but now something's changed. Something's different. Now you're electric with presence. And it's just like, I feel it, right? And that became the catalyst. But the difference between the two contrast is performing. So before, I was performing, whether I liked to admit it or not, for validation or acceptance or to be seen by my peers as someone who's equally gifted at the lanes that we like to kind of share, speaking and training and teaching and podcasting and all the things. And in this case, what was actually true was actually authenticity. Mm-hmm. Was showing up as myself without the need to be anything other than myself. And I find that a lot of us struggle with that. And it doesn't matter if you're in sales, marketing, you're just everyday hardworking soccer mom and dad, like it really doesn't matter. I find that most of us are living someone else's life because we haven't really defined who we are and we haven't gotten in touch with who we are. So that's kind of how the process started for me. I call it becoming one part lion and one part lamb. It's a version of alignment where strength and surrender meet at the same time.
I love the phrasing on that. And I think it really brings to life, you know, the toughness that's required and the boldness that's required in business, and also the softness that's required, you know, in your everyday life. I think while you were just talking, I was thinking about this chip on your shoulder that a lot of people have, and that I think is driving a lot of people towards success, right? That they think they aren't good enough, or they were told they weren't good enough. And it's become this internal narrative that they want to be as good as someone else, right? And that is what drives them toward something. And they think that that is what makes them successful. At what point is that a liability? Or do you think that's a liability the whole time?
It's funny. It's hard for me to know for sure, because there was a time, like, so I didn't graduate high school. I was the kid that they was told that you're going to fail at everything you do because you didn't finish high school, and had all the, you know, I had chaos at home and disorganized family life and all kinds of stuff. You know, the reason I dropped out of high school was to help pay the bills, and like, it was just not an ideal situation. So what was really interesting was my father said one time, I was probably 16, 17, 15, something this time frame. He just lost his own company. And it was still very much a startup even 2 or 3 years in, right? It was like, you're still trading time for money. It's just different dollar amounts, right? Yeah. And He comes to me and he loses his business. He said, always remember this, Scoggins don't get ahead, they get by. And that really stung, but also a huge part of me knew it wasn't true. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of us live our lives by life lies that are cast on us that we choose to accept. And the reason I say that is because for me, for the first decade, okay, hustle allowed me to overcome certain level of circumstances.
Yep.
So hustle allowed me to overcome circumstances, but it was never going to bring me fulfillment. Right. So I felt like it's a key part of the journey. And I feel like right now what I want to do for all of us who have been hustling for decades or 5 years or 10 years or like just trying to force it to happen, right? The more we force it to happen, the more we repel it from happening. So as a result, I try to like let people know is we just need to wake up. Right. And, you know, so people, you know, I mentioned before that one of the questions I get was, you know, well, how do you go from X to, you know, X to Z or A to Z, whatever alphabet you want to use. The reality is I had to do the one thing I never did in hustle culture. I had to start every single day in the form of presence. You see, I find that if you're not, it doesn't matter how successful you are, if you're not successful, you're just getting started. If you will start every single day with a form of presence practice, and I can share what I do, it's whatever. So you can actually get fully aligned because you can't align self until you align with what created self in the first place. That's a fundamental belief that I've found all different faiths, walks, and backgrounds and stuff like that can share in this kind of similar truth that until you align with a higher created self, it's hard to align yourself. So I say that to say that I used to wake up every morning and I would wake up, grab my energy drink, hit the gym, answer text messages, hit the emails, all this kind of stuff. And that would carry throughout the entire day, all the way to 8, 9 o'clock at night. And meanwhile, my kids are off. I would say, hey, let's hang out. Let's have a conversation. Let's do this. Yeah, just let me finish this one email. What I just told my child is he's nowhere near as worth that whatever this email that's in front of me is.
Yeah.
Like it's so addictive, right? And the only way I know out of that addictive hole is to one, have a presence practice every morning where you start in quiet. You don't get on your phone. Like you don't take it to the bathroom to get your morning boo in. Like you just sit still. And the one that worked for me, I did this for 6 months straight that started in this mountaintop environment in Utah, is a journal practice called What I Hear You Say Is. So a lot of us go and practice and we're like, hey, you know, for those of us, for people of faith, they're like, well, God, can you please, I'm praying for this. Can you please bless this? Can you please bless that? Can you fix this relationship? Can you do this? Can you do that? Right? It's all talk. Like we're talking constantly. This presence practice basically says what I hear you say is. So there's no asking, there's no dialogue. This is just like literally hearing the spirit, if you will, or whatever your belief system is, talk through you onto paper. And I've discovered that a lot of the answers are there. What's interesting about that experience is when you do that several days in a row, you will automatically start to feel more peaceful, even in chaos. And the more and more you do it, the more and more it compounds. And before long, you find yourself by sitting with yourself, not proving yourself. Mm-hmm. That's where the dynamic change is. So I say that hustle, yes, there's a time and a place probably to get you going, but I would be consciously asking, is this now the season that I get to awaken to myself and sit with myself, discover what I am? Because you mentioned earlier, I think before we even started recording, it's like things are just coming. It's happening a lot easier. It's just easier, right? And the relationships that you've been dying to have in your life, they just come. They just kind of like, boom, there you are, right? And there's the business deal that you're chasing or whatever. All of a sudden, like you're spending time with your family and the business deal is still happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's a time and a place for all of it. And that's why I believe in the human journey. But I also believe there's beacons of hope and light, like you, myself, and other people who share our kind of like belief in as far as how people can achieve more by doing less in many respects, right? That have to become the beacons of the horns, the bullhorns going, hey, time to wake up. You've been doing this too long. It's costing you everything that you really care about. Let it go. Come on back this way.
All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency. For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I don't think that hustle culture and being with yourself and knowing yourself have to be separate seasons, right? Mm-hmm. They can be done at the same time if you have to be part of that hustling. And I actually was thinking about hustle culture when I was thinking about talking to you. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting in that, like, even when I started 13 years ago, this business, hustle culture was a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Even like everyone was
3 a.m. crush it. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I tried those alternative sleep schedules to try to like sleep less and do more and all the crazy things to partake in hustle culture and try to work myself half to death, you know, just what the cool kids were doing.
Imp in the hospital. Yeah.
You know, it was great. And now publicly hustle culture is not cool anymore, right? But it seems like it's still rewarded in the background. Like if you're online answering the Slack at 11 p.m., it's like, oh, good for you. You're working hard. Why do you think that is?
I think it is because we get a self-value dopamine hit from it. We like feeling needed. Mm-hmm. And because we like feeling needed, we'll do anything to feel needed. Not realizing that's preventing us from actually knowing ourselves, which is how you actually get to the formal version of being fulfilled in the first place. You're also training your team, your customers, your friends, your allies, that it's okay to break past every boundary you have when you should be with your family and spending time with yourself and having your vacation or whatever, that it's okay for them to disrupt your life because their life is chaos. Mm-hmm. Right. So even when I'm working with business leaders now, I'm like, what is your non-negotiable? Like, when are you officially off the clock? Well, it's going to be 6 o'clock. Okay, great. The next time the client calls and says at 6:15, you don't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And you just wait till the next morning and say, hey, I saw you called last night. I was having time with the family. I know you can appreciate that. I'm sure you want to spend time with your own family. But what can I do for you? And you start retraining the behavior patterns. Like you start retraining your clients and your services, but more importantly, you're retraining yourself to actually to like protect what's important to you. Mm-hmm. Again, I think there's an element. I think there's a definite tie back from worth to needing. So if I feel unworthy, if somebody else needs me, then that makes me worthy, which unfortunately is a perversion of self-worth. Right? Self-worth, by definition, has to do with how you view self. That's why they call it self-worth, not relationship worth. That's when you have self-worth, you have everything and everything comes to you.
I read somewhere that you talk about constraints that hold people back. And I have a list here. arrogance, ignorance, impatience, fear, insecurity. Mm-hmm. I thought this was really interesting because it takes a certain level of EQ to even just be able to look at yourself and see any of this, right? Mm-hmm. How do you coach people or help people in just like understanding that this is part of all of us and what to do about it?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think the first thing you can do is you can take any manifestable outcome. So it doesn't matter what it is. I'm trying to close this business deal. I'm trying to spend more time with my family. I'm trying to get this book done. I'm trying to get on more stages, like whatever the outcome is, right? 9 times out of 10, what's in resistance to that is actually not the action. It's the subconscious or emotional belief that's causing the behavior that's causing the action to manifest. So I learned these 5 constraints by living them, in many cases, all of them at the same time. Okay.
Been there.
Yeah, right. At every single turn, what would happen is I went through a substantial, we'll call it suspected embezzlement. You know, I've been through a divorce. I've been through things that cost me team member challenges. I could have exited my company 5 years early if I'd had built it right the first time, like these types of things. And ultimately, these all come down to a term that most of us have heard probably is emotional dysregulation. So you react rather than respond, but you never look at why you reacted in the first place. So you never have the choice to react or respond. And so I started pulling that back and I started looking at the thing and I'm like, okay, well, in the business world, they say top five reasons businesses fail: lack of funding, poor sales, poor market fit, poor leadership teams. The problem is the most common denominator of all of that is the leader. Mm-hmm. It's the person who's driving the bus. You know, so I had to look at myself and like, okay, well, these major significant events happened. What was I operating in? And at times it was arrogance, right? At times it was ignorance. At times it was impatience. At times it was fear, then insecurity. And what I try to move people towards is I try to help them understand the outcome, help them understand the constraint that's not getting them the outcome they want, and then move them to the polar opposite. So for every constraint, there's a yang, right? So there's a yin and a yang, right? So you look at arrogance, for example, the opposite of arrogance is humility without self-abandonment.
Tell me what that means.
So a lot of folks will go under the guise of, this goes back to the one-part lion, one-part lamb framework, but a lot of us will go at a situation, and let's say we've been spending a number of years in arrogance, we'll vacillate to complete humility, which allows us to be completely pushover, people-pleasing, get ran over.
Okay. Right?
There's a way to have humility without self-abandonment, which is by definition is internal confidence or internal worth, okay? You look at ignorance, on the other hand, the opposite of ignorance is teachability. Are you willing to learn? And there's really two phases to this. There's not knowing what you don't know, and then not pursuing the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an identification, I actually don't know how to manage $100 million a year. Oh, crap, I need to learn how to manage $100 million a year. So there's like a bit of humility piece there just to acknowledge, I need to learn this new skill that I don't know. But rather, my team comes to me with everything because I like to feel needed to be responsible of everything. So therefore, I'm not actually getting the answers that I need to build the organization. I'm getting the answers that I feel to keep me needed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Impatience is cool because it's not actually patience. It's not the opposite. The opposite of impatience is presence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The inability to be impatient, to jump the gun, to feel like overdoing it. This is what's called overactivity or overacting. This is a way that subconscious mind is trying to control a situation. So you push. Sometimes you get your answers, and you're like, next level, right? It's funny. I do this thing of if your audience ever sees me on stage or we ever all share a stage together, you'll see me do this. And some of you guys won't raise your hand anymore just because of this, but I'll tell you what, this is really cool. I'll say, by a show of hands, how many of you think you should be further ahead than you actually are?
It's like everyone.
It's literally everyone, right?
Yeah.
And that just goes to show that they're already operating in impatience.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can learn to be present where your feet are and be focused with what's in front of you, now you actually have choices. When you're impatient, you're always going to fly by the things that need to happen or the thoughts that need to take place or the hires that need to take place because you're trying to get to the next thing, not realizing that the thing keeps moving as you move because you're not taking care of the things around it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So these are just kind of like core attributes of how every constraint has an opposite. I mean, you look at fear. The opposite of fear in its truest form is actually trust. I haven't had a single thing in my entire life, and I've been around 50 plus years now, officially, as of a couple of weeks ago, that it has not worked out for my good in the long run. Even the most horrible things that you could think of that could pop up in somebody's life, right? It all works out for my good. So what I typically do is if you're a fear of success or fear of failure, or fear of the relationship or fear of this or fear of that, like you're trying to, in many respects, manifest something that's never going to happen.
And you can make it happen.
Oh yeah.
Right. You can make that bad thing happen. Mm-hmm. If you fear hard enough
and not put energy into it.
Right.
Instead you got to, and the simple switch is you flip it to trust. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't understand what's going on right now, but I'm open source. I'm willing to learn anything. Like I want to be healthy. I want to be whole, and I'm here to learn. Like just that limiting, just that removing resistance allows for the lesson to transpire quicker, and therefore you get out of the fire quicker. Yeah. So I like to tell people, go, hey, let's walk into the forge willingly, not resistantly.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway.
I hope
I can jam for a while on this.
Yeah, I love. And you know what? While you were talking, I was thinking about times in my career when I have shown, you know, those attributes that mm-hmm. I had to discover about myself and what I did about it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, even when you talk about fear, anytime I have a sense of fear, I always tell myself, like, I have gotten through my hardest times mm-hmm. and every situation that I have been scared of has turned out for the best for me. Mm-hmm. And it's always, it happens every single time, right? Yep. And mm-hmm. without fail. Mm-hmm. And it's, but it's hard sometimes to look back at those, like you have to build that muscle mm-hmm. in being able to look back and see the positive, because mm-hmm. I do think a lot of people look at the negative of situations instead yep. of being able to see that silver lining. And you have yep. to, you have to really focus.
Well, again, you have to believe it's all going to work out and everything's, and right. And this sounds cliche, but the first time I heard it, it was profound. The thousand other times I heard it, it felt like a little bit cliche and like, but the reality is it really truly working for you. Mm-hmm. Like it's the relationship that ends out of the unexpected out of nowhere. It's for you. The business that doesn't work out the first time, it's for you. Like it's for you. And you actually don't get to the things that you ultimately enjoy in life without going through the things that prepare you for your character to actually carry the capacity.
Yep.
Right. As your character shapes, your capacity increases. As your capacity, your container gets larger, you're able to steward more, whether it's time, talent, resources, whatever. But the longer we resist pain, the longer it takes to actually get to the, it's like everything you want will always be on the other side of what you're scared to go through.
Yep.
You know, so.
Absolutely. And every next level is on the other side of big challenges. Mm-hmm. And when you feel that resistance and that pain, you're often reaching that
1,000% level. 1,000%. Yeah.
I know we're nearing the end of our time. And there's one more topic I wanted to quickly touch on, which is ego. And I think it kind of brings it back to the beginning of our conversation too. There's a lot of people, I think, that operate from ego instead of a place of alignment, mm-hmm. you know, and we're looking for that scoreboard, that number, and those numbers may even be arbitrary, something yeah. that we want, right? Mm-hmm. How do you know when you're operating from a place of ego, and what is the best advice that you have for getting to a place of alignment or even starting to walk to a place of alignment?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I think the easiest way to know if you're operating an ego is it completely self-interested and it can harm somebody else along the way. Hmm. Right. So I'm weird in that I don't believe the ego is evil. I think the ego is trying to do its job by keeping you protected.
Okay.
Okay. So however, this is again where the lion and lamb come from, because a mature lion is bold, courageous, and protective, right? But an immature lion is controlling, arrogant, dominant, way over assertive. Same with the lamb. The lamb is in its maturity is loving, compassionate, communicative. In immaturity, it's a people pleasing, self abandoning, so on and so forth. The ego is very much the same way. The ego has a mature factor and an immature factor. And part of becoming fully integrated is working with the ego to accept the ego in the confines of love, which then gets integrated where now spirit self leads ego self. Spirit self is far more magnetic and authentic. The problem is the spirit self and ego self like to try to battle for control, mm-hmm. right? The ego will always scream, well, what about me? What about me? What about us? How am I doing this? Like, and that's the ego operating in maturity. So the moment that you feel like you've been betrayed and you've been wrong and how dare they? And that's the ego popping up. Mm-hmm. Now the ego, now keep in mind, it's just in that one little blip, the ego is trying to keep you safe. It's trying to keep you protected. It's trying to make sure this person or whatever this situation doesn't betray you and cause you pain. Okay. The trick is getting to a place where you recognize the ego, you're aware of it when it pops up. Before you do anything, you pause, you go get present, and then you invite that layer of that peace to yourself in with love. Hey, and this sounds crazy. I mean, no, it sounds crazy, but this is true and it works. Put your hand over your heart. If you want to, females, put your hand over your belly. Your solar plexus is different than men, right? And literally say, you know what? I realize you're trying to keep me protected right now. It's, and I love you for that. The good news is I'm now X number of years old. We've been through all kinds of cool stuff. We can trust this process. We can trust this. And what happens is over time, the ego will actually fall in line with the spirit. So now the ego and the spirit become one. That is the process of integration. So there's really four main steps in integration. There's alignment, which I just described. There's integrating, which is putting the practice in place to allow it to fully wrap and become one. Then there's the embodiment, which is carrying, which is literally walking that out every day. Some of that's with emotional regulation. Some of that's with choices. Some of that's with new relationships. Some of that's with new journaling practices or mantras or whatever, prayer, meditation. Like, you want to embody this new version of you and just walk it, walk with this person, this new version of you consistently. Then you get to the fourth phase, which is expansion. You cannot get to expansion without going through the other steps. Alignment is identifying what is missing, what's confusing, what is in need of syncing. Integration is the process of syncing. Embodiment is the reinforcement of syncing. And expansion is the expression of syncing.
If everyone listening today walks away with one takeaway, they remember one thing from this conversation, what should it be?
The easiest way, not to put it in one sentence, is you can't scale dysfunction. You can't scale dysfunction. It doesn't matter where you're trying to scale it, in yourself, in your life, in your relationship, your business, because all the other external attributes are always going to be the embodiment of your internal world. So if your internal world doesn't shift, those other things don't shift, which is mm-hmm. why you can spend an entire life trying to get the love that you want, trying to build the business that you want, and chasing and striving, and it never fully happens. And it's because it's coming from the wrong source. So I believe if you understand you can't scale dysfunction, now you get to go on journey and say, okay, where is chaos and dysfunction showing up in my life? Let's start there.
I needed this conversation today, so selfishly, and I'm really excited for everyone to hear it. And thank you so much for being here. For everyone listening, please share this with one person that needs to hear this message, and I will talk to you next time.